Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Squawker Talker podcast. And with the Premier League and the rest of Europe taking a quick break from domestic matters, here on the Squawker Talker, we are also grabbing ourselves a little break from the norm. Yes, that's right, because the end of the year means one thing: award season. Get your ball gowns on, shine your shoes, and prepare your speeches, because it's almost that time of year, the annual Lionel Messi versus the rest part of the season. And I, for one, cannot wait. But on today's show, it's not about the individuals. It is about the teamwork. Teamwork makes the dream work. As somebody, probably someone that you don't like, once said to you in a meeting, it really, really does. Right, voting is closed for the 2021 FIFA Pro World 11, with the awards all set to take place later this year. So here on The Talker, we are giving you our predictions and tips for who makes it onto the Team of the Year for 2021. So with that in mind, please do expect a fairly argumentative, debating show as we look to thrash out a best 11. My name's Fergal Brennan, and joining me, we have two guys who never argue, or at least they never argue with each other, Squawker's chief football writer, Mohamed Butt. Mo, how's things?
I'm good. Yeah. We're going to argue with you, Fergal, today. That's what we're going to do. It's going to be Mo's versus the Fergal. You know, it's going to be a wrestling match, handicap match.
Mo off. Okay, bring it on, yeah. I'm happy enough with that. And joining Mo, we have our other Mo, freelance broadcaster, Mo Stewart. Mo, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I didn't know we were going to be actually fighting, though, so I might have to do some stretches. But no, I'm looking forward to this. Like, the whole idea of these awards, I know it's a small thing and it really shouldn't matter, but there are certain things about them that irk me. And I'm looking forward to the chance to right some of those wrongs.
Okay, fair enough. That seems sensible. And obviously, stretching, getting prepared, getting warmed up is always the sensible thing to do. So with that in mind, we're going to do some mental stretches relating to the FIFA Pro. So a couple of questions just to get you in the mood. Right, question number one. Who has had more places in the FIFA Pro World 11? Lionel Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo, or the same? Mo, as in Mo Butt, we'll go to you first.
I'm going to say Messi. No, Ronaldo. Ronaldo's had more.
Okay, Mo, yourself?
I think it might be Messi by one.
Okay, right. Well, what a fantastic start to the show, because you're both wrong. It is actually joint 14 each for both Messi and for Ronaldo. Right, what a brilliant, brilliant start to the show that is. Okay, we're going to go club specific. Hopefully you'll have a bit more luck with this. Mo, we'll go to you first with Manchester United and their dealings and involvement with the FIFA Pro 11. Can you name for me the Manchester United players that have been included in the 11? As it stands, they've had seven players as Manchester United players to be in it.
Cristiano Ronaldo, Wayne Rooney, Rio Ferdinand, yeah. Manja Vidic, Patrice Evra, David De Gea.
Yep. One more.
I want to say Scholes, but it's probably not Scholes. But I'm going to say it anyway because I can't think of who the hell else is.
Angel Di Maria.
Of course, because 2014, he moved to Man United. Of course he did. So half a season. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Indeed. Mo, we're going to go with Liverpool for you. Six representatives for Liverpool. So you've got a little bit of advantage, one less. Six representatives for Liverpool. Go.
I mean, it should be more than six, by the way. by that rationale, I'm assuming that Thiago Alcantara is one of them.
Correct.
Because he did the same thing for Bayern and Di Maria did. I will go with Alisson.
Yep.
I will go with Virgil van Dijk.
Yep.
I will go with Mohamed Salah.
No.
That's two more to find. So wait, so who have I said so far? I've said Thiago, Alisson, van Dijk, Salah. That's four.
No, but Salah's a no. So there's three more to get.
I need to find two more. Okay.
Three more.
Salah's not in. Okay.
Salah's not in, none.
Right, okay. Which is, I mean, ridiculous. But okay. Well, in that case, Steven Gerrard must have been in.
Correct.
I was saving him for the big finish, but you made me go early. Okay, so two more. Damn. Fernando Torres?
Correct.
And Luis Suarez?
No. And do you know what, Mo? I'm going to give you one more guess and then we're going to get stuck into it. You're going to kick yourself.
Okay, well, I'll say Trent then.
Correct. 6 out of 6. Trent Alexander-Arnold was in last year's team. Right, let's get stuck into this year, 2021. And as always, with awards, there has to be the boring stuff. There has to be the rules. So I, playing the role of FIFA Pro or FIFA, I'm going to set it out very, very quickly. So the parameters for the award are October 8th, 2020, right the way through to August 7th, 2021. So that does include the international tournaments last summer, primarily European Championships and obviously the Copa America. All players included must have played at least 35 official matches, either at club or international level. And in terms of positions, we have to have a minimum of 3 defenders, 3 midfielders and 3 forwards. But we are following the spirit of previous FIFA Pro 11s and we are going for a 4-3-3. So, right, the fun stuff. Who is in the teams? Right, we're going to start with your goalkeepers, your big number ones. I've got my pick, but we're going to go through this. We're going to do our individual shouts, build our own individual teams, and then we're going to have a democratically elected Squawker Talker 11. So, Mo, I'm going to go to you first. Give us your goalkeeper.
Well, I should point out at the beginning of this that I've picked 3 players for each position. And when I say I've picked 3 players, I have picked my first one who I think should be in the team. But there are 2 others whom, if when we get to the democratic part, I'm happy to give honourable mentions to. So, Mike Maignan of Lille and now of AC Milan. I think he's been fantastic for both teams. I think he's replaced someone who a lot of people thought were quite hard to replace. Edouard Mendy of Chelsea, replacing someone who was a lot easier to replace, but still had a lot of pressure on him anyway. It's been solid, reliable and spectacular when necessary. However, the best goalkeeper in the world in that period of time, despite the fact he plays behind one of the best defences, Jan Oblak. Jan Oblak is the best goalkeeper. I have said it and that's it.
Right, we're going to throw it across to Mo. So we've had 1 vote for Jan Oblak. Mo, are you backing Jan Oblak or are you going for someone else?
Well, I do happen to believe that Jan Oblak is the best goalkeeper in the world. But you have to remember, with the FIFA World 11, it's not just about who's the best player in the world. You've got to take into account, what did they win? Now, Jan Oblak won La Liga. Very, very good. Very impressive. But it's FIFA Pro, baby. It's international tournaments. You've got to give that stuff some credit. Gianluigi Donnarumma, penalty shootout hero in semi-finals, but shootout hero in the final. You know, that he's the big guy, player of the tournament, massive shoulder, broad shoulders, really small head, you know, fantastic goalkeeper, really wonderful goalkeeper, really solid presence, had a great season with Milan last year, left, got booed recently by his own fans when he was playing for Italy in Milan, which just seems, I mean, really harsh, but also I kind of get it. But no, to me, it's Donnarumma, mainly because I'm trying to mix it up, keep it interesting. And also because it is FIFA, you have to weight the tournaments heavily. First, Donnarumma for me.
I will allow that on this one simply because Donnarumma was instrumental in that. But this is one of my first big bugbears. The fact that they just weight it by what you've won. Because not every man on that pitch contributed equally to those victories. Mm. So that's simply fair. By being selected in a team that lifted the trophy should not be enough. You have to have actually done something on that team. As I said, Donnarumma does. I don't think he was as good for Milan as that. I think that there was at least 2 other keepers in the league who were better than him. Handanovic was fantastic. Ospina was really good for Napoli. Believe it or not, David Ospina. He hasn't really that great for PSG. So yes, he has that one big thing in his favour. But I just think that personally, if you're thinking about if you're building a team of anyone and you want it to be solid, I still think Jan Oblak is the guy. And yes, I say he's very helped by the system around him, but that doesn't mean that it's still easy to get past him. I think you could put him in other teams and he would still be that good.
Yeah, I agree. And we've got our first point of agreement because I've gone for Jan Oblak as my keeper as well, because I do see that the situation that we're moving to in terms of goalkeepers being more progressive in possession and looking to kickstart counter-attacks. We've seen that with Edison and Alisson in the Premier League. But I do still think there is room for just getting your basic job done first, which is keeping the ball out of the net. And Jan Oblak, season on season on season, has done that. And that is the foundation of what Atletico Madrid are so good about. The numbers to back it up, 38 starts from 38 La Liga games last season, absolutely ever present, 25 clean sheets, 0.6 goals conceded per game, which is fantastic. Fifth time in his career that he's won the Zamora Trophy in Spain, a trophy that's been absolutely dominated by Spanish players for decades. He's now right in the mix for that. Zero goals conceded against Barcelona, just two against Real Madrid. So when they needed him in those big games, he was there. And 25 goals conceded in the league, which is the joint lowest in La Liga since 2015 when Barca let in 21. So yeah, Jan Oblak for me is number one in 2021. Right, defence. Mo, we're going to go back to you to kick us off on your back four. This is where it's going to get interesting. So give us your back four. Go for it.
It really is going to get interesting. Starting at left back, I really nearly went for João Cancelo, and I'm sure that at least one of you two will, so I'm sure he'll end up in it anyway. But I've gone for Alphonso Davies. I really have gone for Alphonso Davies because I think that when you think of a left back at the moment, you really are looking at it as an attacking element who complements the defence. So you have to look at being able to do both. And he is fantastic going forward. We all know he's fantastic going forward. He is the kind of problem that defences are now having to double and treble up on him. And when you consider the amount of quality in that Bayern team, that's a very big statement. But I was looking into the numbers, as I feel like I needed to for this show, and I saw something surprising because we can talk about defensively when you've got attacking left backs that, oh, well, they're out of position. It's really hard to blame them for being out of position when the system says that. What I want to know is, can you defend when you're there? When you are up against it, when you are in position and they need you to defend it, can you do it? And he can. I was looking at numbers. I looked at one particular stat, which was dribble pass. Because if you're a fullback, you're going to have people trying to dribble past you. That's probably going to be one of the biggest defensive jobs you have to do, stop the ball coming in. Cancelo was dribble passed four times as many times as Alphonso Davies last season. Four times. That's not even a little bit. That's a big difference. And that was what kind of gave him the edge. Don't get me wrong. Cancelo's a fantastic defender, and he's been a very good player in that period of time. But for me, I went with Alphonso Davies. Do you want me to do the full lot as well? So the centre-backs as well?
Give us your full-back line, yeah.
I'll try and do it quicker this time. Okay, so my centre-back partnership, I think there probably will be a little bit more consensus this time. I've gone with Ruben Dias and Antonio Rudiger. Two players who were absolutely dominant for their teams, who both had very good defensive systems, which got them to the trophies that they won. So they really do tick all of the metrics. I'm not someone who puts all of City's defensive improvement down to Diaz, but I don't deny the quality of the man either. I thought about Jules Koundé. I thought about Leonardo Bonucci. I thought about even Marquinhos, who I think is underrated for PSG. But ultimately, Diaz and Rudiger. And I think that they could play quite well together as well. Finally, right back, it's my boy's birthday, and I'm not going to pick him. Trent came very close, but the simple facts are there was a large period in this qualifying period in which he wasn't at his best. I wanted to shout out Reid Lubaku for Wolfsburg because I think he's been fantastic, but it can only be Achraf Hakimi. He has been the best right back in this period of time, and is possibly, well, he is the only other person I really put in the conversation for best right back in the world, aside with my boy. Happy birthday, by the way. So there you go. That's my defence.
Okay, we're going to throw it across to you, Mo. Hakimi, Diaz, Rudiger and Alphonso Davies. There's going to be some agreement, I'm going to guess, but I reckon you've got a few wild cards that you want to throw in there.
Well, first of all, the biggest thing, you can't start with left back. You start with right back. You go right to
I'm left footed. What do you want from me?
No. You start with the right, man. That's the first bit of, that's the first argument right there. That's beef right there. You start with
that
right.
Is, no, that's seriously. Picking a row right for the back. Sake of it.
Hakimi, come on. You can't argue with Hakimi.
Well, yeah, that means that we've obviously agreed on the team. Well,
yeah, it's because I'm just basically going to agree with everything, most of everything you just said. So I'm trying to be interesting. No, look, Hakimi is absolutely lights out. Most penalty box entries of any fullback like since he became a regular at Dortmund. He's a physical freak of nature. He's absolutely miraculous as a footballer. Like, he was amazing. He was really promising at Madrid, and you're thinking, oh God, have they really got one here? And then they sold and they let him go to Dortmund, and you're like, oh my God, no, they've really got one here. And then you're thinking, oh, okay, here we go. He's going to come in. Carvajal's getting injured all the time. He's going to come in, seamless transition. They're going to have Mendy and Hakimi at the fullback. No one's going to drill past them ever. And then they sold Hakimi to Inter, and you're like, are you feeling okay, boys? What's wrong with you? And obviously, now looking back at it, they did that, and they did a lot of things because they were saving money for you know who. But that's just so stupid because Inter, what did they make use of that guy or what? And now PSG have him. He's sensational. He's absolutely outrageous. I don't think it was a stretch to say he was the second best player in Serie A last season. I don't think that's a stretch. Maybe third after Barella, but honestly, phenomenal. Centre back, yeah, Ruben Dias and Antonio. No one else comes close to either of those guys. Our lovely, tall, good-looking, nice-smelling friend at Merseyside spent the whole season injured. So, and John Stones, I mean, as much as he was very good, the goal they conceded in the Champions League final was his fault. The goal that lost them the Champions League was his fault. Massive error. And then in the Euros, he wasn't actually, to be fair, he didn't really disgrace. I figured at some point he was going to collapse into a muddy puddle, but he never did. Fair play to him. But no, he's not on their level. Ruben Dias is a phenomenal organiser, motivator, talker. Antonio Rudiger is a force of nature. I haven't seen a defender like that since maybe prime Puyol, in the sense that, because Ramos is obviously a physical dominant force, rampaging player, but Ramos makes as many mistakes as he does do good things. Rudiger seems to have that Puyol-esque nature to just know when to just run through and bulldoze someone to the ground and when to not do that. Like, and you know, obviously a lot of the time Rudiger is very intense, but if you look at it, he's not always barreling through the back of someone because sometimes that's not what you need to do. Rudiger is a phenomenal, phenomenal defender. It blows my mind. Chelsea were trying to get rid of this guy on loan. Like, there was rumors he was going to go to Barcelona on loan in January 2021. Tuchel came in and said, no, what are you doing? You mad? No. In the team were you, Antonio? And he's been lights out ever since. So yeah, Rudiger comfortably, he's the best defender in the world this season for my money, more so than Ruben Dias, because as much as Ruben Dias has really helped City, what Rudiger does for Chelsea is it's as important as what Kante does in midfield. I'll put it that way. Left back. Now, again, I was going to pick João Cancelo, right? And then I thought, he's a right back. And then I thought, but you know what? It's FIFA Pro 11. You can pretty much pick any sort of defender. They once picked Ramos as a left back in one of these 11s. So you know what I'm picking? I'm picking Azpilicueta. I'm picking Cesar Azpilicueta because you know what, that man, as much as Rudiger is, the other man that's the heart and soul of the Champions League winning defence is Cesar Azpilicueta. Playing right centre back, playing right back for Spain, doing well. But he can play left back. We know he can. We've seen him do it. He's really, really important to Chelsea because it's not just that he's the captain. You know, Captain League legend is the meme, right, for John Terry. But he is Captain League legend. He's won every single thing you can win at Chelsea as a player. He's been phenomenally solid. He's so, him and Rudiger, I mean, I know we did a How to Switch Chelsea and we were pinpointing Rudiger and Azpilicueta as the weak links in terms of their passing. But in terms of their defending, forget about it, man. Those guys are so important to the defence that they can, they make 37-year-old Thiago Silva look really good because they're so brilliant. They cover the ground. They mow people down. They motivate their players. They're great. Azpilicueta can even play wing back. So yeah, that's my back four.
Okay, I think if you listen to the podcast, you probably waited, I think it's around 19, 20 minutes for Mo to get his great big squawker talker shoehorn out to shoehorn somebody in. He's managed it. He's managed to get Cesar Azpilicueta in at left back. We've got pretty much uniform agreement across the board here because my back four is exactly the same as Mo's. Not Azpilicueta, obviously. Hakimi, Dias, Rudiger and Alphonso Davies. So, in interest of, kind of democratically elected defences, that is the squawker talker back four. Achraf Hakimi, Ruben Dias, Antonio Rudiger and Alphonso Dias. Apologies, Mo, and Cesar Azpilicueta, but you just don't quite make the cut. And I think special word for Alphonso Davies. He's the only one to make
democracy.
It into democracy at its finest. Alphonso Davies is the only one to make it into this team for Squawker Talker in 2021 and being the official 2020 defence last year. Trent Alexander-Arnold and Virgil van Dijk are out alongside Sergio Ramos, and Alisson, who we should have mentioned in the goalies, has been replaced by ourselves, which is Jan Oblak. Right, we've had a lot of agreement at the back. I think it's about to start to get quite messy, although we'll talk about Messi later because he's not going to be included in the midfield. So as a midfield playmaker enthusiast that you describe yourself as Mo, I think it's only fair that we go to you on this first. The engine room, the centre of the park, give us your three midfielders.
Okay, well, I've agonised over this more than any other position because, as you can tell, I'm a bit of a fan of midfielders. So straight up, shout out Frankie de Jong. I'm sorry, boy. I love you. You're a fantastic midfielder. You're one of the best in the world, but I couldn't put you in here. Even though he's been fantastic and, frankly, it wouldn't be wrong to put him in here in a sense of he deserves it, but there have been midfielders who I think have done better. First up, first name on the team sheet is number seven, Golo Kanté. For the very obvious reason that Chelsea won the Champions League and he was man of the match in the semi-final first leg, the semi-final second leg, and the final.
Yeah.
And we've seen recently he's not been in the team or he's not been fully fit and they look rubbish. Everyone else is there. He's not there. It's like, what do we do? And because you don't think of Kanté as a playmaker because he isn't in the traditional sense. He's not really an expansive pass with the ball. His 5-yard passing is atrocious. Like passing it, if it's in a 10-yard circle, it's like, what are you even doing? He can pass it 30 yards easily, more easily than he can 5 yards, which is baffling to me, but that's who he is. I've never seen anyone use speed as a defensive weapon as effectively as N'Golo Kanté. It must be nightmarish to play against him because he can be 10 yards away. You're like, okay, I've got time. And then like you blink and then literally when you open your eyes again after blinking, he's right in front of you. And you're like, what happened? Where'd you come from? He must be so annoying to play against because he's so good. And unlike the other player who I feel uses pace as a weapon really well is Jordi Alba. And Davies as well, actually, to be fair, does this quite well. He seems to have learned from Alba copying that playbook where he just gets caught out of position all the time and then it's like, oh, and he's fast enough to get back and make a tackle. But Kanté doesn't get caught out of position. He's in the right place all the time and then also can go, oh, there's someone 10 yards away that has the ball. Let me go get the ball off him. He gets the ball off him. And on the odd chance that guy gets the ball away and the ball gets worked back behind where Kanté was, he's back there already making the tackle on the guy. And you just think, how is that even possible? It's like he teleports around the bits, like he's Nightcrawler or something. He's phenomenal. So he has to go in the team, even though he's not a great passer and he can't really play in a three. But FIFA, I mean, you have to play a three. But whatever. He's amazing. He's wonderful. He's a great human being. Glorious, lovely man going in the team. First thing on the team sheet. This is the controversial pick. Actually, no, I'll save that one for last. Next up's Pedri, right? He's like 18 years old. Just, what more can I say? You watch him play, you don't think he's 18. He looks like he's 28. As Fergal will know, the Squawker Talker podcast over the Euros was basically just a Pedri fan cast. We just spent the whole, every pod was like, Pedri's amazing, isn't he? Literally, everyone, God, Pedri's great. I was just going, Pedri in the background of every pod. He's incredible. He has the sort of lungs of a fully grown man, even though he's only 18 years old, has the physical robustness and energy to get up and down the field and play box to box almost if he had to, makes goal line saving tackles, goal line saving blocks, gets up the field, passes brilliantly, dribbles gracefully. His through ball against Benfica, which should have resulted in an equaliser, was amazing. He's so good. He's so confident and calm. Luis Enrique put him right into the Spain team. Didn't have any hesitation. He mugged off everybody he faced at the Euros. Like, he destroyed Jorginho before Gavi did it last night. By the way, Gavi, what a player. Before Gavi did it, Pedri mugged off Jorginho and Verratti. Everyone was like, oh, Italy going to be Spain. And I was like, look, man, let's just see. Italy haven't faced a midfield like this yet. They came up against it and Pedri was dominant. He was amazing. The only thing he can't do consistently is score goals. Right? Other than that, he can do everything. He's been sensational. Barcelona had a pretty rubbish end to the season, but that was down to the defence and more obviously the attack. It wasn't the midfield. Their midfield was amazing. Busquets, Frankie, Pedri. While I couldn't get Frankie in, and Busquets, obviously, because Kanté did so well, you can't get Busquets in either. And he's really looked his age. It's got to be Pedri. So those two are going in. Controversial third pick, because obviously there's lots of other great midfielders to pick. There's Jorginho, who for some reason I think everyone thinks should win the Ballon d'Or. But I mean, to paraphrase Mo, you know, he was just kind of there when Chelsea won that stuff and when Italy won that. He wasn't kind of there. That's a bit unfair. He was very, very good and very important for both teams, but he was not the best midfielder for either team. And I mean, that's just all I have to say about that, really. No, Jorginho, no. Sorry, not happening. There's lots of other good midfielders, right? Obviously, Gundogan had an amazing season. Very, very good. I had to shout out Gundogan. Modric was amazing. Not so much good this season, but last season was like throwback, looked incredible. But no, it's going to be Rodrigo de Paul. And I'll tell you what's going to be Rodrigo de Paul. Because obviously very good for Udinese last year. Has been pretty tasty for Atletico Madrid so far in fits and starts. But he's there for the Copa America. Because Argentina have been trying to win something for, I think, at least 30 years. Never been able to do it. And most of the reason they've been able to do it, because they've had the most amazing forward line in the last decade, it's not been able to do it, it's because their midfield has been rubbish. Not being mixing my words here, it's been absolutely four-star expletive, honestly. It's been so bad. Mascherano's an amazing player, but it's like been him and then just a bunch of idiots who don't deserve to wear the shirt, frankly. Or Banega, who has the talent to wear the shirt, but is just a plonker. Now, Lucas Biglia, who's, I mean, come on. It's just embarrassing. Enter Rodrigo de Paul. He's a guy who's dogged, relentless, started as a winger, but has the energy and discipline to play central midfield, tracks back, gets involved, then carries the ball forward, dribbles wonderfully, passes the ball wonderfully. And he's just has the guts and the confidence to stand up and be counted in big games, including the Copa America final, which is always where Messi, who's always dragged Argentina to these finals, did it three times in a row, 2014, 15, 16. Then what happens is in the final, your opponent thinks, okay, let's stop the best player in the world and dare the rest of them to beat us, which they do. And then no one else can beat them. And so what happened was, obviously, Brazil were like, we're going to stop Messi. And they stopped Messi. Well done. Someone had to step up for Argentina. Someone had to play a pass, play a killer ball. Rodrigo de Paul. And if you haven't seen this goal, go look it up. It's 40-yard pass, 30-yard pass, turns around, curls it, beautifully arcs over the whole defence, puts it right into Di Maria's lap. It's a sensational pass. It won the game. Di Maria got man of the match because he won the game. But honestly, Rodrigo de Paul was the best player on the pitch in the Copa America final. Won Argentina's first trophy since 1993, I think. Just absolutely sensational for that match alone. But the whole, he had a great season, obviously. But for that match alone, he goes in. Rodrigo de Paul, absolutely outrageous. My hat's off. I'm not wearing a hat, but if I was wearing a hat, I'll take it off.
Right, we're going to throw it across. Kante, French international, Champions League winner with Chelsea, Marathon Man Child, Pedri, semi-finals with Spain at Euro 2020, played more minutes than anyone else at Barcelona last season. And then a bit of a left-field shout with Rodrigo de Paul, Udinese, and now Atletico Madrid, and obviously Copa America winner with Argentina. Mo, give us your midfield three.
I like all of those players, and I don't think any of them are particularly bad, although none of them made my three. I have to say as well that my original team was built on a 4-4-2 arrangement. So I've had to do a bit of jiggery-pokery in terms of the third spot. But I think the first two are quite solid. First position, central midfield, Joshua Kimmich of Bayern Munich. I think what weights it for him over some of the other defensive midfielders is that he's not really actually a defensive midfielder. I mean, Chelsea play with a guy whose job is to do the mopping up. They don't really play that way. He's expected to do stuff going forward as well, which he does in spades. But he's become Thiago in that team in as much as he is the tempo now. Like, you'll see the way he receives the ball from the defenders with his side on, so he can see the ball coming to him. He can see where everyone's making their runs. And it's when he gets the ball that everyone starts their runs now for Bayern Munich. He is the guy who is controlling that midfield. And he's the most important player in that team, if you ask me. And then on top of that, you can think about the goals that he's contributed. The decisive moment in Der Klassiker last season where he does that absolutely outrageous chip from the edge of the area to win the game and pretty much wrap up the title. Fair enough, he wasn't played in his best position for Germany at the Euros and they didn't do very well. But I think that he is still one of the most informed players in that position at the moment. Second midfielder, I really, really almost went for his club mate, Gundogan, but I'm going for Kevin De Bruyne. Simply because I think he's also the most important player in his team. And you can't argue with his quality. I don't think I need to go too into depth in that. He is the most consistently brilliant deliverer of a football in the world, in my opinion. consistently good from passing, from crossing, long and short. But he also sets the standards for that team, not just from his quality, but even from his effort. When they're behind, he's the one that they're looking to. He's not afraid to make a big tackle either. And I think if you're going to play central midfield, especially in this team, you're going to need to make the occasional tackle. So Kev's in for me. And so my third midfielder, I nearly went for Kante. I really like Nicola Barella. I think Rodrigo de Paul did really well, but I'm going to go for his club mate as well, Marcos Llorente, because Marcos Llorente is the reason that Atletico Madrid became a lot more solid in the biggest games and they were able to go out and win those games. Yes, they had Suarez scoring the goals. Yes, they had Old Black stopping the goals. In terms of dictating the play from wing-back position, something that Kieran Trippier had done previously, he was able to do it in a way that even Trippier hadn't been able to do. He was able to get double figures for goals and from assists from that position. He basically ended the Atletico career of a guy who they were willing to turn down bids for £90 million 2 years previously. And he came into the Spanish team and he made just as much of an impact. So when you put all those things together, my bid goes to Marcos Llorente. I, however, do understand that in the context of the democracy within this, he might be vulnerable. So I am willing to negotiate when it comes to him. The other two, I think, personally, are strong picks. Locked, almost. But we'll see.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, the spirit of democracy is always negotiation. Before I throw my hat in the ring, Mo, you have followed a line of consistency here in terms of previous picks from 2020, because the 2020 midfield also included Joshua Kimmich and Kevin De Bruyne, but alongside them was former Bayern Munich and now Liverpool midfielder Thiago Alcantara. Right, my midfield three, and I'm split down the middle between both of you. It's like picking between two sons. I've gone for some of Mo's suggestions and some of Mo's suggestions. So my picks for midfield, obviously, it would destroy the Squawker Talker as a brand if we didn't have Pedri in there. We've been building this fella up. Not that he needs any building up, because he's absolutely sensational. Runs like an absolute marathon man. He's fantastic on the ball. He played more minutes than Messi, Griezmann, anyone else at Barcelona last season. And then just to go away with the Spain squad for the first time ever at an international tournament and be the main man. He played every single minute for Spain, who had extra time three times during Euro 2020. And at no stage, except I think maybe in one game where he came off in added time, did Enrique think, I'm going to take you off because you're too exposed. No, you're the man. And he'll be the kingpin for Spain's midfield for the next decade. N'Golo Kante also gets in for me. I'm still convinced that there is two N'Golo Kantes. It's the only logic I can come up with of the way that he's able to play, the ground that he's able to cover, the tackles that he puts in, and just, as Mo rightly said, he's absolutely central to everything Chelsea do. All those star names that do attract or maybe want the limelight, N'Golo Kante has absolutely no interest in it. His only interest is being the best in his position in the world, and he is. So them two are locked in, but I'm going to flip-flop. I'm going to go across the other side for my third pick, which is Kevin De Bruyne. And the reason for that is big game player. We look back to those games last season in the Champions League. Mo, you said about Kante being man of the match in Chelsea's semis and then in the final. Kevin De Bruyne was man of the match in City's both games against PSG, got himself a goal, helped out Mahrez getting his key goals to get past PSG. And there was just moments in those PSG games where you thought City are going to City here. Like when it's a really massive game, they've got so little experience of Champions League semis and Champions League finals, it's going to crack, something's going to give way, and De Bruyne just wouldn't have it. There was points, and I do not use this comparison lightly, there was points in that game where he channeled Roy Keane. He was Roy Keane in those moments. We're not doing what we normally do. We're not letting this go. We're beating this team and we're getting through to the final. But unfortunately, he ran into the brick wall that is Antonio Rudiger in the final, and that probably ended any chance of City getting back into it. So Kev De Bruyne is in mind. So the combined Squawker Talk at midfield is Pedri, N'Golo Kante and Kevin De Bruyne. I think we're doing quite well. You know, plenty of agreement.
I do want to say two things.
Go on.
First of all, I've got no problem with Kante or Pedri, but Kimmich was my first name on my team sheet. I just wanted to put that out there straight away. But, you know, I realised we're democracy. Also, I have noticed that the democratic answer of all of us also happens to be rather similar to your own individual picks.
But that's where we meet this wonderful point of democracy becoming a dictatorship.
Don't get me wrong.
The true real essence of a democracy is that it actually is a dictatorship in behind. Guys, these are just convenient accidents, you know? That's what a good dictator will tell you. Right, moving on to attacking. Okay, let's try and fall this dictatorship. Let's try and fell me as a dictator in this podcast. We've got a lot of agreement, but I think it's going to fall apart now because in attack, we're never going to agree. Europe is full with goal machines, absolute goal machines. There's no way we're going to agree on this. So, Mo, we're going to go back to you. Give us your attack in three. I can't wait to see how much we're going to agree on this.
Well, as I said, I was originally working on a 4-4-2, so I had one kind of a widey forward. But, I mean, in 4-3-3, it can work. But you're right, we're not going to agree on this at all. And I think this is probably going to be the hardest of us all to agree on out of all of them because, frankly, there's been ridiculously large amounts of good forwards in this period of time. Like, I'm not even going to get a chance to talk about Memphis Depay. I'm not really going to get a chance to talk about Mohamed Salah. I'm sorry. It hurts me. But no, I have to be real. There is that much quality we can't afford to mess around. So, with that in mind, number one, in the left channel, because I am starting with the left. So
no.
Screw me. We need some way of telling us apart. Okay.
Okay, so, fair. Right.
So, left side, Federico Chiesa. Just an unbelievable run in that time. And just a revelation. He is, I say Juventus are Chiesa FC, and I tweet it every time he scores because they would be lost without him. And from an attacking standpoint, Italy would be too. He is the catalyst. He is the spark. And he has managed to get better in his decision-making. As we saw last night, many times he would have tried to shoot. He crossed it because he knew that it was a guaranteed goal for Locatelli. And that's what happened. He's learning. He's becoming at the sharp end of elite football in a way that he hadn't before. And I just think that if you're picking a team right now, tomorrow, to try and win the biggest title in the world, and you're playing 4-3-3, who would you play there? I'm playing Federico Chiesa there. I'm sorry. That's the answer. Two. Well, I'm going to go easy on you now because I feel like this one's a little bit more consensual. Robert Lewandowski.
Just a bit.
I mean, this is going to be short. Essentially, Robert Lewandowski is not only a fantastic striker, but he's having one of the best years of his own career. And when you've got players who are that good, and there's that many of them, we're going to have to make this decision. I weight that very highly. When even by their own standards, they've been remarkable, that's when you've got to say, okay. And he is in that bracket. He's not only just scoring goals at a phenomenal level. And this is the thing. Sometimes you can get really lost in the raw numbers and say, goals. But it's not just about the fact that he scores his goals. It's how he scores those goals. It's his relentless penalty box predatory instincts, but it's also the fact that he gives no defenders any peace at all. They always have to have at least one or two people looking at him every game. And even at the times when he doesn't score, he's causing them problems from that particular reason. He's slightly better than Haaland in terms of his build-up play, which is why I give him the nod over him. I think he's actually been more decisive in terms of winning things than Benzema, who I think has also been good this season, so I'll give him the nod over him. So, my final forward, three, Romelu Lukaku. Romelu Lukaku has been possibly the best forward in Europe in this period of time. The most important player for three teams in this period of time. And he has been absolutely dominant for Inter Milan, as you all know. He hasn't maybe scored as many goals as Ronaldo, but he has been the go-to guy, the linchpin. He has been the face of that league, a league that contains someone whose entire being and soul and fortune is derived to being the face of a league. He did it better just by actually playing football. And the relationship he built up with Martinez, the relationship he built up with Hakimi, taking on the bully from the other side of the fence in Zlatan, taking on the hate from the stands that he had to deal with on many occasions, winning into that title, going to the Euros with Belgium and almost dragging them into a decent position. He was scoring goals. I think he scored 4 goals in that tournament. He was, again, their most dangerous guy. And it wasn't just goals. It was just that dominant way that he scored goals. And there's been an aura about him in this period of time where he has ascended to the top of football, where he's like, I don't care what anyone thought about me previously. I don't care what you saw. This is me now, and I am going to win, and I am going to dominate. And he's done it for Chelsea as well. We've seen a couple of games where they've struggled to get the ball to him, but when he has been in position, he has been deadly. He's been lethal. He's been everything that they thought that they needed. And obviously, I will address the Argentinian elephant. What I said before about Lewandowski, a lot of that was also true of Lionel Messi. It's true. But the difference is, I think Messi's had at least 4 seasons better than this season. And that's even taking into account the fact that, yes, he did win the Copa America. Because as Mohamed said earlier, in the final, he wasn't that good. They shut him down. And they've got to the final before, quite a few other times. So to say that this one was better because someone else won it rather than the other ones where someone else couldn't win it, I don't buy that. So for that matter, I'm sorry, Lionel. You've got a big enough cupboard right now. We're going to give it to these guys.
Okay, fair enough. Lukaku, Lewandowski and Chiesa. Mo, that's your front three. I'm going to throw it across. Mo, give it to us. Who is your front three?
First up, Lewandowski. Just let's not beat about the bush. Robert Lewandowski is very good. 48 goals in 41 games. I want to say, was it 40 games last season? 40 games. 48 goals in 14 games. He scored, the streak had been this season where he scored like 14 games in a row, 19 games in a row, something like that. He's outrageous. He's a great goal scorer, fantastic goal scorer, hell of a player. As much as I care about the Ballon d'Or, I feel bad that the Ballon d'Or was cancelled last year because he would have won it.
Yes.
And I'm sure that would have meant a lot to him, meant a lot to the people of Poland. So it's a shame that he didn't get that chance, because he's not going to win it this year. But he's phenomenal. He's very good. He's number one. Number two is Lionel Messi because he's the best player in the world still. Smashed all the metrics in La Liga for everything, top scorer, top assister, chances created, all that stuff. I don't have it all down. just outrageous footballer. And had the most bizarre game ever against PSG as Barcelona eliminated in Paris because he missed the penalty and you're thinking, oh no, he's going to have a stinker. Then he scored he blasted it in from like 30 yards and he made like 6 chances for Ousmane Dembele, who was like, no, I'm not going to score today, you know, and missed them all. And so you're just sort of thinking, okay, it's just never going to happen, is it? And then won the Copa America, which, okay, yeah, it wasn't great in the final. Brazil keyed on him and stopped it, man, it worked. But he was phenomenal the rest of the way. He got Brazil to the final. He got Argentina to the final again, the 4th time he's dragged them to a final, by the way. And this time without the help of Mascherano. Obviously, in the final, Rodrigo de Paul stepped up, fair play. But, Messi was key to them getting there. And, you know, that alone is it. You know, he's just a man. He's still the best player in the world. He's settling into life in Paris reasonably well, I guess. I don't know. That team needs a new manager. I'm sorry, Pochettino, by the way. Don't buy the hype about Pochettino. He's the best player in the world. And my third pick, this is hard. Because there's a lot of good forwards. I big love for Shot God, Chiesa. Massive. I was amazed that he passed yesterday. I thought he's going to flip in hammer. It's going to break the net. And he passed. I was like, okay, fair enough. Shot God is amazing. Cristiano Ronaldo is very good, obviously. Marcus Rashford didn't have his best year last year, but still, again, beat the UK government twice. Both those times were after October, which I just think alone makes him... really,
candidate,
if you're going to award Ballon d'Or for excellence, that's excellence right there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like just, yeah. If once he gets his football, hopefully he comes back in full fitness now and gets his football mojo back. Because once he gets his football mojo aligned with his personal mojo, it's just it's over for everyone else. Jadon Sancho was very good in the Bundesliga last year. Had a bit of a rough start with Man United. Didn't really play much in the Euros. Fair play. Raheem Sterling was rubbish for the Man City and then amazing in the Euros. There's so many good forwards. Memphis Depay, phenomenal. One of only three players last season to top 20 goals and 10 assists. I do in top five leagues along with Messi and Lukaku. So Memphis was sensational. Started very well in Barcelona. Then they signed Luke De Jong, moved him to left wing. Hasn't worked since then. There's loads of great players. There's loads of... And Nasiri for Sevilla, by the way. Really, mm-hmm. really impressive player. Mm. There's loads of great players, right? Gerard Moreno. I could go forever. There's honestly so many great players doing the rounds. Lukaku obviously is a great shout. I'm going to go with Haaland. I'm going to go with the freak of nature. Oh, Kylian Mbappe, he's very good too. 27 goals in Liga last year. But I'm going to go with Erling Haaland because he's Champions League top scorer, 10 goals. I think the youngest ever to be Champions League top scorer, or certainly the youngest since someone ages ago. A physical freak of nature, a dynamic, ridiculous presence. He scored 40 goals in like 40 games, like 41 goals in 41 games last season for Dortmund. He then said, I should be scoring more than a goal a game. When you have someone literally saying, I should be scoring more than a goal a game, you sort of have an idea of the level of mental strength and mental determination this man has. It's ridiculous. Who the hell says that I should be scoring more than a goal a game, really? No one says that. No one even says they should be scoring a goal a game. Well, maybe Cristiano did, but this guy's like, I should be scoring more than a goal a game, really. And it's like, you know, and then he did it. So Erling Haaland is absolutely sensational. And as much as Kylian Mbappe moving is going to be seismic this summer, whoever gets Erling Haaland, that's going to be almost, if not just as big, because Haaland is, where Mbappe is a more rounded player, capable of being a very intelligent winger at times and all that sort of thing. Haaland is just a goal-scoring machine. Like, he's built to score goals. He can play as well. He can make assists. He's got a fair few. But he's just a physical marvel who's so good in the long game and the short game. He can do everything. He's just outrageous. Yeah, for me, it's Erling Haaland, Champions League top scorer. We forget how young he is as well. That's the thing, because he plays so well. Plays so powerfully. So for me, Haaland on the left, coming in off the left, Messi cuts in on his right foot, pings those little passes. It's not Jordi Alba's passing now, it's Erling Haaland. And Erling Haaland isn't going to do what Jordi Alba does and miscontrol the ball and fluff it. He's going to just smash that thing into the back of the net. So good luck defending that.
I mean, I'd like Haaland to be better with his head for someone who's literally a tree. And I think he's going to get better. And that was another reason that I held against him, is that I felt like there's going to be many years in which I can't avoid picking him. And my man Lukaku, this was his year. So that's why I went with him.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
I mean, I love a guy who played for probably two of my biggest rivals of my team. And I love him this much. I feel like that should be worth something.
it says a lot. It speaks volumes of the man. It's like, you know what? God damn it, I respect you so much. Yeah. You know, God damn it, I hate you, but oh my God, you're so amazing. Keep doing what you're doing, my friend. Mm. You know, it's like me with Mohamed Salah. I'm like, I love you.
Okay, right. So we've got Messi, Haaland, Lewandowski up against Lewandowski, Lukaku and Chiesa. A little bit of agreement from me, but I've actually gone for someone that you've both mentioned but not included. Robert Lewandowski, 3-for-3, absolutely sensational season. Broke the Bundesliga goal record, European Golden Shoe winner.
Yeah.
Sensational for Bayern Munich. And obviously, they grabbed themselves another Bundesliga title. 41. It can't be understated. 41 league goals in the Bundesliga. Absolute madness. So he gets a shout for me. I've gone for Messi as well. And not just the argument that it's Messi, he has to be in, etc. The situation at Barcelona can't be understated. It was a mess. The civil war that's going on now was brewing right the way through last season. Messi still just carried on doing what Messi does, which is being the best player on the planet, scoring goals, winning them games. There was a portion kind of midway through the season at the start of 2021 where the title race was derailed for Barcelona. It was Atleti and Real Madrid were going to hold them to it. And his goals, his performances, late goals against Valencia, Villarreal, Real Betis, kept them in it. Then they get into the last month of the season and all they've got to do is stay solid and Koeman cocks it up. And it got to the point where that final game against Eibar, where he basically just said, he didn't refuse to play, he basically just said, I'm not playing because I'm possibly leaving. I want to go to the Copa. I want to rest. Just you know, Pedri, put Pedri up front. He can run. He can play up front. Just leave me out of it because I don't want to play. So Messi for me is in.
Yeah, he was not happy. And it's hard to understate really how much Messi has been carrying Barcelona. Yeah. Not just on the field, which is an obvious and anyone can see that, but just the way that he's literally been hiding and covering up the mistakes of the Bartomeu regime for years now, literally years now. Like Barca hired Ernesto Valverde as a coach and Messi made it work. Like that should not have worked. They hired Quique Setién and that didn't work. Obviously, that was too much. And even Ronald Koeman, again, like if Koeman hadn't completely screwed the pooch, they came this close to winning La Liga last year. They had it in their hand. They were the dominant team. And then he started making weird changes, weird subs, and they threw it away. What Messi's done, and it's strange, obviously, because Barca fans are always talking about how Barca have wasted Messi's, the last few years of Messi, and they have in many ways, but also in other ways. What Messi has done in this last, like, since 2018, really, since 2017, since Neymar left, basically, has been almost as impressive as all the great world-class historic things he did before, because it's been carrying a club, not just on the pitch, but off the field as well, been everything to their club. And, I mean, we've seen this season the seismic shift in the team. Now that he's gone, it's like, oh, my God, what's going on here? And the team can still play good football. And Memphis was a really smart signing in that regard, by the way, I should say. But it's not the same without him. Teams aren't as afraid of Barcelona as they were, if they're afraid of Barcelona at all.
And he's, in terms of numbers, in terms of his numbers from last season, just absolutely madness. 30 league goals in 33 appearances, 38 in all competitions. And if you're talking about anyone else other than the extraterrestrial that is Lionel Messi, they'd be absolutely celebrated. But for him, that's just almost bang average because he just does it all the time. And my pick, which, as I say, he's been mentioned but not called up into your respect. But he's still just sensational. For me, it just doesn't feel right. It doesn't sit right with me not having him in the team. So my final call, because you two are not the only Mo's in my life. There is another Mo, and he has a massive, massive place in many Liverpool fans' hearts as well, obviously, and that is Mo Salah. Because this award runs up until October. And since the start of the season, since the start of August, Mohamed Salah has been the best player on the planet. Absolutely sensational for Liverpool. And obviously we kind of judge this based across the season and the months that are involved, etc. So we look back to last season and we look over the last 12 months. It's not been bad. 37 goals in 56 games for Liverpool in the last 12 months. So yes, he's been excellent at the start of this season and we are measuring it against last season. He has still been absolutely sensational. And I'm bending the rules slightly a little bit because I know we're not meant to be including this season, but it does have some sort of relevance, but his numbers are up there with anyone else. Lukaku was incredibly close. I was tearing myself to bits picking between the two of them, but I just think Salah, maybe it's a little bit of recency bias, Salah is my pick. So with that in mind, we find ourselves with our first real standoff for the combined 11. Robert Lewandowski is in by virtue of 3 votes. Lionel Messi is in by virtue of 2 votes, but that means we've got 1 place left on the team sheet. So the fairest way to do this is a vote, but you can't vote for your own man. So the remaining players left are Erling Haaland, Romelu Lukaku, Federico Chiesa, and Mohamed Salah. So the rules are you can't vote for your own man, so I'm not going to vote for Salah. I'm going to vote for Lukaku because for me, it was so, so incredibly close. I agree with everything Mo said before in terms of his performance. Just incredible. The key man for Inter. Just absolutely incredible. And I'm delighted to have him back in the Premier League. So my wildcard vote is Romelu Lukaku to add into the combined 11. Mo, we'll go right back to the beginning of the front three and we'll let you have your shout.
Well, I mean, I haven't really got much choice here, have I? I mean, it's got to be Salah, right? I mean, the reality is, the reason why I didn't pick Salah is because, yes, last season he was by far our best player, Liverpool's best player, sorry. He was there in times when no one else was. But there were still times when he wasn't good himself. Like, the numbers were there, but there was times the performances weren't. Maybe because I've seen and studied and dissected every performance of him, I'm grading him a little bit harsher than others were. And also because, like I say, if I'm leaving Messi out, then I've got to put a high bar in here. So seeing as that's now gone, and let's face it, I knew I was going to lose the Messi fight. It's one of those, you just need to keep getting in as many good punches as you can. But that's fine. So yes, Mohamed Salah has been fantastic. And I think, obviously he doesn't have the international weight to go along with it. But like you say, in terms of influence, in terms of quality, he has been on another level from what even he had been previously. So you're not going to get much argument from me if it ends up being Salah.
See, now you guys have put me in a situation where I have to put between Romelu Lukaku and Salah. Like, what? That's not fair. You can't put that on me. That's cruel. Go away. This is an abusive workplace environment.
There's going to be five subs in this team. Don't worry.
No, look, seriously. Salah, look, man. Look. To speak on both of them, Lukaku, faster than 50 goals for Inter than Ronaldo. I mean, what else do you need to say besides that? Led the line, won the title, was an absolute phenomenon for Inter. Genuinely, like, really special. Power, pace. Yes, he has those things. He also has an incredible first touch now. He can also, as good as he used to be at rolling defenders for Everton, oh my God, have you seen him roll defenders now? It's like they're not even there. It just turns around him like a flipping carousel door. It's outrageous. The precision finishing, either foot, really, frankly, as well. Everything he's got, everything a number nine has, you want from a number nine, he has it. Mohamed Salah, I mean, my God. You know the biggest thing I could say about Mohamed Salah, I think, actually, honestly, in 2021, is that he scored against Man United, not just once, but I think four times. Like, no, because honestly, he never scored against Man United, and he was always rubbish. Ashley Young marked him out of the game like three times in a row. And you're like, what the hell is going on here? This guy's killing everyone else. Why can't he score against Man United? And it was the same thing. Klopp could never win at Old Trafford. With Liverpool, he just couldn't get around it. And it was like, United are rubbish, Jurgen. What's wrong with you? You've got the best team in the world. But he couldn't crack Old Trafford. He was terrified of it. I don't know why, by the way. It makes no goddamn sense to me. But he was. And then obviously he went there at the end of May and I played like four games in 8 days. And United were just like, we're so tired. And he was like, oh, now's my chance. And then Liverpool finally won at Old Trafford. But Salah had already cracked Old Trafford earlier in the FA Cup. And he scored twice in that game. They lost the game because Bruno Fernandes comes to bench. But he had scored twice. And I was thinking when that happened, I was like, okay, fine, United win today. But that's going to be interesting to see now, because now he's got that monkey off his back. What happens now? Because, you know, the thing with Salah is it's like you're always thinking about what can't he do? And there's always a limit. There's always some things like, okay, so for example, he doesn't really track back all that well. He doesn't really pass to Mane enough. He doesn't really score at Old Trafford. Then suddenly what happens is he's tracking back. He's passing to Mane. He's scoring at Old Trafford. And you're just like, well, okay. I guess you can do everything then. Look, I'm gonna have to give it to Lukaku just because he won a title. I love Mohamed Salah. My heart, I pick Mohamed Salah because I think he's magnificent, fantastic, wonderful person, amazing footballer, love him to bits. But Lukaku won a title. So that for me gives the tip. So it has to be Lukaku. But Mohamed Salah, you are amazing, wonderful, fantastic. And I agree, you're the best player in the world right now. Just aces. Really, really good. Well done.
Yeah, you can only pick 11 players. It's the hardest job in football. So I think we've got some form of agreement. So to call it the Squawker Talker World 11 for 2021, combined with some level of agreement, Jan Oblak, Achraf Hakimi, Ruben Diaz, Antonio Rudiger, Alphonso Davies, N'Golo Kante, Kevin De Bruyne, Pedri, Lionel Messi, Robert Lewandowski, and Romelu Lukaku. That is some team. I reckon that team put together would do pretty well. Guys, before we wrap it up, I've got one last little bit of trivia to throw at you for a bit of fun to call it a day. Luis Suarez is the most recent European Golden Shoe winner to win it playing in the Premier League. Thierry Henry is the only player to have won it twice during his time at Arsenal. And this is one of my favourite pieces of all-time trivia. Who was the first Premier League winner of the European Golden Shoe?
I think I know the answer to this. Was it Kevin Phillips for Sunderland?
Bingo! Yes, Kevin Phillips was the first Premier League winner of the European Golden Shoe.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
30 goals for Sunderland in the 1999-2000 season. Kevin Phillips, unfortunately, didn't make it into the team, but as we said, not everybody can. But brilliant stuff. Hat tip to Kevin Phillips for your incredible goal scoring with Sunderland. Right, gents, we're going to call it there for the Squawker Talker podcast. Mo, as always, thanks so much for your time.
Hey, it's been a pleasure. Shout out Mohamed Salah one more time.
We did okay. It wasn't too bad. Like, I came out of it better than I thought I would. I lost maybe some of the battles I thought I would, but you know what? I'll take that.
Indeed, indeed. These things are never easy, of course. Right, that's it for this week's episode of the Squawker Talker podcast. We'll be back next week, hopefully with a few more arguments, debates, and discussion to be had. Don't forget to check out the podcast then, and we'll speak to you very, very soon.